Welcome to the Voices for Voices TV show and podcast. I am your host, founder and executive director, Voices for Voices, Justin Allen Hayes. Voices for Voices is the number one ranked podcast and TV show where people turn to for advice, expert advice on mental health, recovery, and career advancement intelligence. Our Voices for Voices podcast is all about teaching you insanely actionable techniques to help you prosper, to grow yourself, to grow your worth, and your personal brand. So, if you are a high achiever or know somebody who is and who would benefit and wants more out of life, whether mentally, physically, or spiritually, please make sure you subscribe to our podcast right now, as you'll find all Voices for Voices content across our social media platforms. And as you can see, the Voices for Voices podcast publishes episodes that focuses on case studies, real life examples, actionable tips, and in the trenches reports and interviews from subscribers like you. So again, if that sounds like something that you makes you, we'll be able to, if that sounds like something that you or somebody you know could help grow personally or professionally, then please join me and subscribe to the Voices for Voices TV show and podcast. But not only that, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, X, TikTok. We're really trying, as well as our YouTube channel, we're really trying to put out as much actionable content as possible. And so what we're going to do for this episode is we're actually going to pick up, and this is part two from a previous episode that we filmed, but our conversation was still going, and we had some areas we wanted to still share with you and to help out. So we wanted to bring this second episode. So the second episode, or part two, is with our in-studio guest, Jamie Stauffer. She is a healthcare professional. She's from Canton, Ohio, and she has a diverse set of skills that includes leadership, marketing, clinical education, and product development. Jamie has a solid educational foundation with an MBA from Walsh University and a doctorate in physical therapy, also from Walsh University. She's known for building effective teams, executing marketing strategies, and fostering key industry relationships. So again, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I'm glad we're able to continue the conversation.
Absolutely. So for our listeners and our viewers, the end of our first part of our talk with Jamie was around trade shows and some of the stories and the hiccups and different things, some fun, some not fun that occur. And so we're just going to start there and pick up and wanted to share one other area that, as Jamie was speaking, I wanted to share as an example, because looking back on this example, it's funny, but at the time it really wasn't funny. So I'll jump right in. So the organization I worked for, we had a trade show, and it was in Las Vegas. And so we went through the whole show, and the end of the show, we, as well as I'm sure many other organizations do, we have what was called like a cash and carry program. So we were basically selling the product off of our shelves, and so we were making dog leashes and harnesses and those types of products. And so our booth was made up of those products, different colors, different styles. And the reason, well, two reasons why we did that is, one, obviously, is to make money as an organization. That's kind of the goal to continue on. But secondly, we were going to be shipping the rest of the booth back to our warehouse that we store till the next time. So it kind of helped us out twofold. And as a first time trade show manager, again, not my skill set by far. I gained a ton of experience, some good, some interesting, and this is one of the interesting areas. So again, cash and carry program at the end, and so the goal is to sell all the product that we have, and so again to make money as well as have less going back on the truck, from Vegas back to Ohio. So end of the show comes, and a customer comes up, and they show us the areas that they wanted to purchase, the different colors, different styles. So our accounting department, they pulled out the price list, and due to the volume that this customer was going to purchase, they were given, an additional discount on top of what they're already going to get. So they were working through the numbers. And so as this is going on, and I'm seeing the numbers kind of add up, and understanding that it's cash and carry, so there's at some point there's going to be some type of a cash transaction. So at the end of the day, this customer had purchased over $10,000 of product. And so good for the organization, again, on both of those fronts. But the issue that was starting to kind of bubble to the top of my mind is, well, I'm the trade show manager, so I'm kind of in control of the money. And this show, again, I think I said Vegas, but this one was in Orlando. So my bad there. Key is it wasn't in Northeast Ohio. So end of the show comes, and this individual comes, and they just have their purse just normally. And so we go into we had a conference room at our booth, and go in, and this individual literally pulled out like $10,000, or it might have been $10,500 or $11,000, but it was at least $10,000. We saw the rubber bands around and that. So as this is happening, I'm thinking, how am I gonna be able to get this back to Ohio? I'm in Orlando. Our organization didn't have a bank down in Orlando, even though we had been at this show for many, many years. 30, 40, 50 years, it was a ton of time. And so nobody thought it would be a good idea to open up a bank account so that we could just have that transaction, and then we could all get on the plane safely and not worried about being mugged or worse to happen. So transaction happens, have the cash, and I'm the trade show manager, and so everybody's looking at me, like, okay, Justin, you're gonna transport the money back. We're gonna fly out. It was on a Saturday, so and then we weren't gonna get back to work in the office until Monday. And then at that point, our accounting department, they would take it to the bank, and they would handle a transaction. So I had to transport on my person over $10,000, through security. And I didn't have TSA pre-check at the time, so I had to go through and hope that, as my belongings, I'm not going to put it in a check bag, so I have to go through the scanner and all that. Made it through the security checkpoint, made it through the plane ride, and then when I got home, I put it in my safe for the 2 days until work came up. And so now looking back, it's funny. It's like, oh, it's like one of these funny stories. But at the time, I was absolutely terrified because I was thinking, well, there's probably a lot of people that know that these types of transactions are happening, and these people, and I'll say these people, but individuals could know that there's individuals from organizations are having these transactions. They could be having flights, end up in the same spot, and they could do, rob me, like either at the airport or, you know, on the airplane, or when I'm going to, you know, I'm at baggage claim waiting to get my bags back in Cleveland. Anyway, so super long-winded story, and I'll close it by saying this, that what Jamie was mentioning in the first episode, and I'm sure she'll touch on it now as well, is you're going to find some things that you like and some things that you probably don't like in a job. And if you play a team sport, there might be a play you like to have run, or an area that, you know, depending on what sport, if, you know, the goalie or a forward or defender, whatever that may be. And so for me, at that point, that was something I didn't like. I was always open to learning new things and wanting to gain more experience. But that experience with the money by itself, that even when we got back to our home office, I brought up, you know, to my leadership about, like, hey, you know, maybe we should think about having an account. And, you know, down, you know, the trade show cities that we have, and they were against it. And I'm like, okay, yeah, there's maybe a small chance of being mugged with that money, but I was like, that's not good for kind of work or employee safety, I guess to call it. So I was completely uncomfortable. And if it wasn't me, somebody else had been doing them for the 40 or 50 years prior. And that was one thing I knew, that if I caught wind of that at another job, that probably wouldn't be something that I'd like to do. So maybe Jamie can maybe dovetail somehow off of that. Of, you know, you talked about the transferable skills, finding things that you like to do, things that you might not like to do, and then you talked about, you know, when you're interviewing for, you know, trade show type of role, that, you know, flexibility and being able to pivot are big things for those types of roles.
Absolutely. And trade show coordinators, a thankless position for all of those that have those positions out there. But one of their high skill sets is be able to pivot an organization. But that brings up another issue, I think, that is important to address in regards to handling conflict or handling an issue in regards to a position. It's not necessarily going to be a matter of if, it's going to be a matter of when you encounter something within one of your positions that you don't necessarily agree with. Hopefully it is met with open minds, that they're able to come to a resolution, but the manner in which you approach and bring that up, as well as trying to position solutions, which I think the second part is the most important part of that conversation, the manner in which that's done is a skill in and of itself. And so often whenever I'm talking to individuals, and you know if you're a people person, you know if you can handle those kind of conversations, or if you handle conflict well, you're able to smooth over tough conversations well. Those kind of skill sets are the kind of things that I see are strengths in sales individuals, because they're able to handle tough personalities, they're able to handle those kind of conflicts. So we go back down to those transferable skills. That is one of those things that, from the healthcare perspective, you're gonna encounter patients that are difficult. That is just the nature of the position. And if you find that someone puts somebody on your schedule because you just deal with them better, it's because you have a skill. You've got a skill and ability to handle difficult personalities and difficult conversations, which is great, and it's unique. So leverage that. And so that kind of goes back to, you're going to run into that no matter what position you have. And being able to position yourself and putting yourself at the forefront to be able to handle those kinds of things will help you to rise ultimately. Because there's every position has a situation where it is a really, really difficult customer, or it's a really difficult personality within the team, and you'll find yourself, and I'm getting paired with that situation because they know that you can handle it. And it's a great quality to have. It can be a little cumbersome on your side, but it's a great quality to have because you're able to then translate all the way across. The next time a situation comes up, you'll find yourself being the go-to person or the difficult problem that you can't quite figure out, but you know you've got a go-getter on your team that will figure out a way. Every single time I've got a difficult problem, that's the first person I'm going to or the first person that comes to my mind of, you know, so-and-so is going to do a really good job with this because they're a go-getter and I know they're going to figure out a way. They can think out of the box. So it kind of all comes back to things that we do in our day-to-day that we don't realize is a transferable skill. We just kind of handle it. We just do it. Well, take a step back and look at what that is. When are people contacting you? When is your name coming up in the conversation? And if it's something that you don't know, either there's two things that need to happen. You need to pay a little bit closer attention, or maybe you need to change your circle.
Yeah.
But understanding when your name is coming up, those are your strengths. Those are your skills that you are strong in and what people are thinking of you. And so look at possibilities and dotted lines to additional career paths and directions that you can take that and expand upon that.
Yeah. So you come across as a person very comfortable speaking in settings. And one of the things that is most scary, I guess, to individuals is public speaking. So how do you handle that? How do you get past, I want to call it like the fog of presenting? Because I remember back in my earlier days, I was like, oh my gosh, I like presenting, but like, I lose my train of thought. I have to have all these aids, note cards or slot. And I'm finally at a point now where I don't need that as much. So I'm just curious, as like a fellow person that does a fair amount of speaking to clients, speaking to many different individuals, wearing different hats, that how can an individual get comfortable with that? And I guess how did that come? Was it just like a natural thing of, okay, I know I'm going to have to do this thing, and so I'm going to, here's how I'm going to prepare for it, or any thoughts or tips?
Yeah, I have a couple things on that. But first off, I want to start, by no means am I an expert, and there's obviously opportunities for me to improve. I talk with my hands like crazy, so I know that's one on mine.
Oh, me too. I'm not supposed to do this.
But how I figured that out was I started watching videos of myself, recording. I am doing an education, I'm recording, and I'm watching it back, and I'm realizing that I have an extremely expressive face, and I talk with my hands a lot. So there's things like that that you start to kind of cue in on what you are doing and what areas to which you can improve. Some of the things that I do recommend is figuring out what works for you. I early on in my career, I had an individual that was very much what I'm scripted, would script everything out and would ask me to read from that. I found that I don't work well with scripting. I read it, and it sounds like I'm reading a page out of a book and not natural and authentic, and so I didn't like that. However, I do like compiling ideas and bullet points. And so for me, it was, thinking through what am I going to talk on, thinking through some of the highlights of what a potential conversation could go, negative and positive, in ways to which I address it. The other thing is just practice. It truly is, I mean, even on the way over here, it's like talking to myself in the car.
Yeah.
It's practice. It's just a matter of like, oh, yeah, I need to touch on that skill, or oh, I need to touch on this. And we may not even cover it in this conversation, but it is kind of getting you in that mindset and essentially getting the wheels working in regards to what you are thinking about. Something I always tell people is if, in terms of true public speaking, you're speaking in front of individuals, practice, 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 and record yourself and watch it back.
Okay.
What you think you look like and sound like is different. So areas for you to improve upon, but at the end of the day, I will say don't get caught up on the small things. If you stumble on a word, you cough, it's normal. You're human. It is okay. I guarantee that is bothering you much more than your audience members that haven't even given it a second thought. So a lot of it is just don't get stuck in your own head.
Okay. And that's huge. Like, that's like a big thing.
It is.
It's one thing to be, I find myself stuck in my head sometimes so much that it's like, where's the day go? Or...
Yeah.
I can't do this one thing after my daughter falls asleep. because like I have these other things I gotta sort out in my own self, and I'm like, oh my gosh, and it's like, let's try, like, oh, is the TV on? Yeah, like, let's try turning it off, and then work through those things. And for somebody with my mental history and mental illness, those are just things that like just have to not, and don't have to have a mental illness to do it, but. Again, just find things that might be impeding what's going on. Like, okay, at this time, I'd like to do one or two things, small things, but I'm not finding that I'm able to. Like, what's going on? Like, is my phone on, or all those things? And so, again, in a transferable skill, because if you're in a meeting, you have to focus in, and if you have a speaking part, like, and you're expected to share information or answer questions. Being caught up in your head about, well, where we're going to go for dinner, or like a meal.
It's trying to figure out what works for you. And one of my other favorite phrases is analysis paralysis. Sometimes when we look at all of the options and all of the things going on and we're so high level, we get ourselves stuck and we can't make a decision. And it's sometimes the 10,000 foot view is not the best view. And when you need to make a decision timely, it's focusing in on what your gut is saying and looking at those two things or looking at those two options and trying to figure out where you want to go. But all of that comes with kind of introspection and understanding, like, what is my style and what works for me? Yeah. It is not going to be the same thing that works for you. And understanding that that's okay. Everyone is unique in that way. But the quicker that you identify what that is, the more you can implement in your day-to-day, and you'll be able to benefit from it.
Absolutely. Being okay not being everything to everyone, that's one thing I have to tell myself. Like, there's certain things that the mind can only do so many things before it gets exhausted, and I might do some work, but it's just shoddy work because I'm just trying to get an extra check mark done on this thing. Or if I wait till tomorrow, if it's not something that's super pressing. But just being okay with it, and kind of to your point about that 30,000 foot view, like, if you cough or if I mess up a word on a teleprompter, that not to be so caught up in that aspect where an individual or an audience,
you're human.
Yep. And I think that's big, to just accept it, to be okay. And it doesn't have to be this whole, like, you don't have to go on some elaborate retreat and all these things to find out these things. It can just be, okay, I like to do this. I want to do this more. What are the things that are impeding that? You know, if saving money and the finances are good and not going bankrupt and just kind of like at a bare minimum, like, yeah, maybe I give it a try. Maybe I start a podcast. Maybe I reach out to somebody that has one and to see if I can maybe be a guest on it. What's the worst that happens?
Absolutely.
Nothing.
Absolutely. Yeah, giving it a try. And it's one of those things, if you feel incredibly uncomfortable about doing it and it's not necessarily going against some of your personal values and beliefs, but the uncomfortableness is you not feeling comfortable, probably means you should do it.
Yeah.
Means that you need to take that step. And that's looking at strictly as it's, you know, checking all the boxes of your own personal values, ethics, and everything. It's not making you uncomfortable in that aspect, but it's more so it's making you uncomfortable because you're afraid that you're not good enough, or you're afraid that you're not able to tackle that. Do it. That means that you're going outside of your box of comfort, which is so incredibly important. And it kind of goes back to, I always tell people whenever they're looking at jobs and looking to apply for jobs, they'll look down through the job description and they'll say, well, I don't meet this bullet point. Good. If you meet 100% of those bullet points, the job, you're overqualified.
Oh, right.
You found an area to which you can grow. And so kind of pushing those limits and understanding. So if you don't meet that bullet point, the next step is, what can you do to learn about that? Is there a course? Is there somebody you know? Is there somebody in your network? Is there, you know, something you can do to expand your knowledge on that? Even going into the interview process and being authentic of, you know, it's not my greatest strength. That's okay to say. You don't have to go in an interview and say, I'm going to ace every single one of these bullet points. I know it 110%. It's not my strongest area. However, from the time that I received the phone call to the point that I did this interview, I took this course on this, and I thought this aspect was interesting. Now I just showed initiative. So that tells me, if I'm on the other side of the fence and interviewing that candidate, that if they don't know something, they're going to go out of their way to try to find something. They're going to do their research. They're going to try to find things like that. So you always hear research the company and things like that, but there's individual bullet points and skills of where they're going to hone in on those as well, because there's opportunity for you to expand. And if you're reading through job description and you're saying, yep, do all this today, and you want to apply to it, great. It's probably going to be more of a lateral move. It's not necessarily going to be expanding upon what you're doing. And that's okay, too. You don't necessarily have to have, you know, an advancement of climbing the ladder. Lateral moves are great. Sometimes it's just getting into that company and that, getting that experience, new leadership. So there's a lot of things you can gain even from lateral moves.
Excellent. So we're coming to the end. it's coming faster and faster. So faster, second time for sure. What haven't we covered? Is there something that in those conversations on your ride over, or anything that we cover that you want to share?
One of the big things I see in regards to the questions of, we talk about identifying transferable skills and people especially that are making the leap from one career to a completely different career path. We mentioned on the first episode about networking and the ability to kind of expand. Something that I think is invaluable and so important is anytime you're applying, you always have your 2 to 3 top jobs and you're like, I really want this position. Go look up that company. Go find who works there. There is someone within your degrees of freedom that works at that company. Guarantee it. Have a conversation with them. Is the hiring manager listed? Contact them and work yourself down. Don't necessarily wait for that HR person to call you. There's opportunities for you to get your name out there and get in front of those individuals before you get the call from HR. But also, it gives you multiple pathways to get to the hiring manager. So if I know somebody, they can refer me internally, and I'm applying online HR. Sometimes some companies, Amazon's a perfect example, there's a separate link for application if I have an internal referral than if I have an external referral. So there's things like that that you want to take advantage of. So that would be my other big thing in regards to, if you're changing career paths, identify who works at that particular company and ways to which you can get referrals. And it doesn't necessarily have to be somebody that you know. It can be someone you don't know. Be proactive, reach out, have those phone conversations, and get to know the company. You've got an opportunity, a unique opportunity, to get to understand the culture of a company and leadership of a company before you even get into it by just talking to current employees.
Absolutely. And oftentimes there is a little bit of time to do that.
Absolutely.
From between the applying and getting that call back. Jamie, thank you so much for sticking around for 2 episodes. I really wanted to cover these topics and share anecdotes and everything we covered is invaluable to anybody on the workforce spectrum. So,
thanks for having me. Absolutely. Anytime.
Absolutely. So just a programming announcement. Now that we're in our 3rd season, we're well over 100 episodes. So thank you for the love and support we've received. Donations, we are a 501c3 organization. You can find a donation link in the description. And lastly, for 2024, we are starting a bi-weekly roundup on our Facebook page, where we're going to talk about different current events, hot topics that are affecting our community, and issues that might be affecting not only our community of Northeast Ohio, but maybe other jurisdictions, other states. And sometimes those issues are global and they're still affecting us. So be on the lookout for the 2024 biweekly roundup, Voices for Voices Facebook page. Again, thank you for letting us come in to your homes and your ears to bring the 3rd season. And our 4th annual A Brand New Day Gala will be held in the month of October, a date to be announced soon. So again, thank you to Jamie for sticking around for 2 episodes. And we really hope that a lot of this content is really helpful. I believe you can reach out to her on LinkedIn is the main avenue for that. So that would be helpful. If you enjoy the content and interaction, again, and not looking for a transaction-based relationship, get to know what she does, and potentially down the road be able to work together. So, until next time, I am Justin Allen Hayes, founder and executive director of Voices for Voices, and we hope you have a great day and be a voice for you or somebody in need.